St Conleth Park development update. We saw the statement that emerged over the weekend. I'm joined by the chairperson of the St Conleth Park redevelopment programme, former CEO of the ESB, of course, board of directors of the Corrie. You're still on the board at the Corrie project, I think you are.
We're working away. Yeah, we're doing well.
Yeah, Pádraig, it's like they say, you know, a busy man retires. There's no such thing as retirement.
Well, it's different for everybody, I suppose. Some people like to hang up their boots, and some people like to keep going. And I suppose, you know, I have an interest in things, and as long as I'm healthy, I'd like to keep doing a few things, you know.
Yeah, how did you find, by the way, Clem, chronologically, of course, is approaching rapidly. Some people would say he's gone beyond rapidly that particular stage as well. How did you find the transition from the top of the corporate tree, and I say that with the greatest respect, running one of the state's biggest operations, the ESB, to basically comparative? When I spoke to you yesterday, you said, I'm doing a bit of gardening.
Well, it is a transition, but I suppose I had been in that job in the ESB for 10 years, and I think that's long enough for anybody to be a chief executive. You know, certainly in companies like the ESB, it takes a long time to do things, because big infrastructure projects take a long time to plan and get executed. So 10 years is probably a reasonable time, but at the same time, I don't think longer than that for any chief executive is good. So I always knew that was going to happen. I was happy that I had, you know, done well in it, and the company had done well, so it was time to go, and I was good with it.
Yeah, I note your point about the 10 years, by the way, for any CEO. I'll write that on my particular card in regards to in here as well. But I would bring that up at the next board meeting of KFM in terms of that. So what possessed you then, might I say, to take on the chairpersonship or the chairmanship of the St Conleth's Park Development Committee?
Well, I suppose, you know, Clem, those of us who've always been involved in the GAA, you know, people say it's like the IRA, there's no escape, you know, once you're in, you're in, and that's it. And I suppose, you know, I have always been involved in the club in Naas, and you know, Ger Donnelly approached me about the St Conleth's project back in 2017, believe it or not, and we talked about it at that time, and, you know, for a project like that, that's so important for Kildare, I was quite happy to take it on.
Yeah, now you mentioned Naas, and listen, what a year. I've spoken to the respective captains, Owen Doyle and Brian, in the last couple of days we were doing the draws for the various championships and hurling and football. What an incredible club, and what an incredible achievement.
Yeah, and it doesn't happen overnight. You know, a lot of hard work has gone in by a lot of people on the ground to sort of build teams, but it was a phenomenal year. Like, from August to February, we were at matches nearly every Sunday.
I know.
It was an absolutely phenomenal run. You know?
I was in my office every weekend saying, right, lads, we have to arrange coverage of this game and that game. Brian Byrne, the captain of the hurlers, of course, who's a marvellous hurler as well. So you took on this. I recall when this was first floated, and I saw the initial plans, I saw the project documents, and I said, grand. Because with the greatest of respect to Kildare GAA, and I'd like to think that, you know, we get on very, very well, but there's times when you have to call out a problem. And St Conleth's Park, to put it in the kindest terms, leaves an awful lot to be desired. The average club in this county and anywhere in the country have better facilities, and it doesn't do justice to the standard of Kildare GAA, Pádraig.
No, it doesn't, and I think everybody involved knows that. And I suppose part of it came from the stalled project that was to move out of Newbridge at that time, and that would kind of stopped people from investing in the grounds on the basis that it was going to move at one stage. And then when the crash came, that all went, and I suppose people were left with a stadium that was now crumbling,
and is still crumbling.
And still is. And it is in a very poor state. And we all acknowledge that and accept that.
Yeah, and I've spoke to fans. I've covered matches over there over the years. You speak to visiting fans and they can't believe, Jesus, is this a county ground? But just to say to you there, about that original strategy, is it suitable to have a county GAA grounds now smack in the middle of a town like Newbridge, whereby traffic is always congested generally throughout any day? On match days, it can be nearly impossible.
Well, my own personal view is yes. I think that
to keep it in the town.
I mean, I think very, very much so. And I think that, you know, even when we spoke to the county council back in 2018, when we were looking for planning permission, that was an issue that was discussed in some detail. And the council actually were keen enough to keep the activity in the town if the whole traffic situation could be managed. Now, I know that, you know, there are traffic problems on match days, and maybe more will have to be done in terms of park and ride in relation to that. But I think to keep that kind of activity in the centre of Newbridge, I think it's really, really good. Like, one of the things about the development was the inclusion of floodlights, and my own personal view, I mean, this isn't a GAA strategy at the moment, but my own personal view is that more and more league games are going to be played on Friday nights and Saturday nights. Yeah. And I think that is going to be a huge boost to Newbridge when you have games played under lights and you have that sort of, you know, activity that happens in the town after that.
I know the economic spin-off, the ripple effects, how important it will be. But, you know, if you're looking at a stadium that might be hosting major games or whatever. But anyway, it's a big debate and it's for another day. I have broadcast from, I think, every single ground in the country. Every single county grounds. I think 31 left at the of 32. I'm trying to think of the one that I wasn't in at this stage over the years. And you see some magnificent stadiums. I mean, I think of Carrick and Shannon, where Kildare travelled to. It's a lovely, lovely ground altogether. But many of the grounds have relocated. And I'm just wondering, as populations become more congested, Kildare is a burgeoning population centre. Yeah. The fastest growing youth population outside of the four cities, based on census figures that I had a look over in the past for reasons, company reasons in here. And I'm just wondering how realistic it will be 10 years down the line, Padraig, would you still share that view that a county GAA grounds smack bang in the middle of a major urban centre would still be worth having? Albeit for the reasons that you've outlined in terms of the ripple economic effects.
I suppose people have different views on it, but my own personal view is that yes, it is the right thing. And I mean, a lot of time and effort went into discussing that as to whether we should bit by bit start to grow a new grounds outside. But my own personal view is that that is the right thing to do.
Okay.
I mean, with Croke Park, with Lansdowne Road, they also looked at those things. But when they were redeveloping and all decided that they wanted to be in their home place, and even though there are difficulties doing it, I am solidly in the camp of it's good to have it right in the
middle. All right, we won't flog that particular one. Croke Park once thought of going to Athlone and places like that. Indeed, I just wondered that with the way Hawkfield was developed, would that have been the venue? And it's still in the sense of Newbridge. But yes, you make the point. Everybody wants to go for a few pints after the match and not have to drive 10 miles or 15 miles or 20 miles or whatever else. This development, you can correct me on the figures because I'm working off memory here now. When I first saw the development a couple of years ago and I saw the documents online about it, we were talking about, what, 19 million, was it?
About 9 million.
9 million?
Yeah, about 9.5 million was the figure that was the detail. When we had the detailed design done back in 2018, we started 2017, we got the design done, we applied for planning permission in 2018, and at that time we had a QS estimate for 9.5 million to do the project at that time.
But the QS being quantity surveyors?
Quantity surveyors estimate. So a detailed estimate was 9.5 million in 2018. Now, what happened in 2018, you'll remember yourself from your sports that the Irish hockey team got to the World Cup final.
They did.
And immediately after that, government announced that they were going to invest in large-scale sports infrastructure projects. That was this LSSIF project. And as part of that, in summer of 2018, they said they were going to include 3 GAA grounds in that. And the GAA decided at that time it would be Newbridge, Navan and Waterford. So the government started it, and we were, Croke Park at that time told us to sit down and wait for this scheme, that we were going to get a fairly sizable grant. So the scheme, we had to submit applications in April of 2019, and then in the first quarter of 20, decisions were made and we were granted 4.875 million at that time.
Right. Where was the other 4 million projected to come from?
Well, at that time, you know, there was a combination. We ourselves were going to have to contribute a certain amount of money, and we had committed to contributing 1 million in cash and 2 million in debt.
And was that money in the county board coffers?
Yeah, it was indeed.
Because the difficulties, financial difficulties, previous to that regarding Kildare GAA were well chronicled, when a cheque could not be signed without the permission
of counter signature. And I think that, you know, a lot of credit has to go to the officers who have worked in the county board since that time, and particularly, you know, in terms of finance, Alan Dunne, who's the county treasurer through that time, and phenomenal progress has been made. So we had a deal for a loan of 2 million and cash of 1 million, and Croke Park were contributing as well. So between Croke Park, ourselves and government,
9 million was covered.
Well, in actual fact, by the time all that happened, because time went by, so the project had risen to about 11.2 million at that stage.
Why?
Because 2018 was when we did the original final estimate. 2019, the government applications were in. Yeah. 2020, they gave the grants. And by that time, inflation was
already hitting. People think inflation started last week in this country in terms of construction inflation. So we're at 11 million, but essentially, the wherewithal is covered in terms of government, Croke Park, county boards and whatever else. And yes, you have to, I was very critical of the county boards, how it allowed itself into that financial situation at the time. But credit must go for the fact of the way Kildare negotiated its way back to a very, very healthy financial situation they have currently.
Great work.
So, then COVID hit?
COVID hit. And we lost the best part of a year because of COVID. From the government grant of the first quarter of 20, we lost about a year for COVID. And then after that, like when you get a grant from government, let's say 4.875 is a lot of money, but you have to first of all give a cost-benefit analysis. Then you have to do a 25-year operational plan. Then you have to get your tender documents, which must comply with the government procurement guidelines because you're getting a government grant. You must get them approved, and then you must get your drawings approved. So you have a combination of dealing with the Department of Sport and the Office of Public Works to get all of that clearance through. I mean, it's a slow process, but it's understandable. There's a lot of money going out to a lot of different projects, and they have a system, and you have to go through it. We weren't complaining about it, but it does take time.
Yeah, and we know what COVID did to every sector in the country. This business, every other business, projects, plans, everything went out the window. So we go through 2020. Obviously, 2021, Kildare was hit by lockdowns more than other areas of the country, including a particular three-county lockdown, and that played havoc with everything. Games had to be played, schedules had to be put in place. We arrive into 2022, and a statement is issued on Friday. As previously indicated, we were planning to appoint a contractor in quarter one of this year and commence construction in quarter two. That was the opening remark of the statement.
Yeah.
I'll leave it to you to explain what has happened. We've had COVID. What next?
Well, after COVID, the big issue that happened, that people in the construction sector will remember towards the second half of last year, that there was huge inflation in steel and timber.
Yeah,
and that was, you know, was running rapidly. But on top of that, we were aware of that. We were sort of taking account of that and what we were doing. But on top of that, then the war in Russia, the Russian war in Ukraine started, and prices went out of kilter completely. So the upshot of that is that, you know, our estimate of 11.2 million is now between 30% and 40% shy of what is required. So the impact, you know, we immediately
30-40% shy. Are you talking about now 16-17 million?
Probably between 15 and 16 million.
You mentioned, by the way, and there's a report issued today from the Banking and Payments Federation of Ireland. It warns that any easing in price growth might be offset by cost pressure in the construction sector, which will likely have a knock-on effect on house inflation. And they threw out some of the numbers earlier on, with inflation in terms of construction measures ranging from 18.2% last April, with the inflation in some materials such as metal or wood, which St. Conlon's Park would need, running at between 50% and 60%.
Yeah. And that's what we've been hit with, Clem. Now, we've spoken to Croke Park, and we've had a number of sessions with the government and with Croke Park, and the government are very well aware that, you know, we are one of the first projects in this large-scale sports infrastructure fund to be ready to start work. And if we can't get off the ground, then the whole scheme is threatened. So they are aware that inflation is a big problem. They haven't told us yet what they intend to do about it, and but we are in consultation with them. So, I mean, what we want to let people know is that we definitely will not be in a position to start this summer.
Right.
But this project is going to happen, Clem. You know,
you've just preempted my question. Yeah. I was going to say, is the redevelopment dead?
Absolutely, under no circumstances. And I know people have been saying the project is shelved. Shelved has a kind of a long-term issue to it. You know, we definitely will not.
I use the word paused.
Definitely. You could use whatever, you know, postponed, shelved, whatever. But like, this project is going to happen. Kildare needs it to happen. We're absolutely determined it will happen, and the money will have to be got, whether it's ourselves, government, and Croke Park, or a combination of all three. We will have to do that. Now, it'll take a bit of time to negotiate that. So we didn't want people to be sitting wondering when is the sort of construction work going to start. We will not be able to start this summer, but we are working really hard to try and make sure that The money is put in place, and I can guarantee you this project is going to happen, Clem.
On that positive note then, Padraig McManus, chairperson of the St. Colin's Park Redevelopment Programme, thank you for coming into studio. It's good to see you again.
Always great to be here.
Very, very active. You know, there's no such thing as retirement for a busy man. It's just a case of other things to be dealt with and whatever else. We wish you well in that. The whole county will wish well in that. But we thought it important to have this discussion to just get out the real reasons as to why St. Conan's Park has been paused for the moment. You're confident that the obstacles of the 40% inflation can be overcome?
Well, I think those of us who've been involved,
because it's going to be,
yeah,
it's cumulative.
It is cumulative.
It's aggregative. It's 40% at the moment. It could be 50% by next year. It could be 60%.
And those of us who have been through inflation before, that when, you know, when it ends, prices don't go down. They stop rising at the same rate, but they don't go down. We're well aware of that. But people like, you know, Tony Jones, myself, and the county officials, Mick Gorman, Alan Dunne, you know, we are not giving up on this project. We are determined it's going to happen.
All right. On that note, very positive note, thank you very much indeed, Padraig McManus, for coming in and joining us.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie. Kildare
KFM. And thanks again to Padraig McManus for setting out the reasons that the St. Conan's Park redevelopment has been paused. I mean, given the cost which moved originally from the 9 million up to around 15, 16 million now. And it'll be more than that by next year, folks, because that is the way inflation is running. Consumer prices rose here by 8.2% in the year to the end of May. And look, it's certainly going to continue for the rest of 2022. That's hundreds of euro more that each person has to spend indeed to just get the basics, the fundamentals that you need. Can you believe that amongst those, one of the issues where there is inflation is hitting is toilet paper prices, believe it or not, because figures from Nielsen say the toilet paper prices rose by 15.6% in the year to May, which is way above the general increase in the price of consumer goods. And making matters more complicated for consumers is the fact that toilet paper is regularly one of those things that is on special offer in shops. You buy the big multi-pack, you know, instead of buying the small packet. So what happens now? That means the consumer is suddenly having to pay full price for the toilet paper. The company that makes Andrex and Kleenex say it's going to start pushing through a mid to high single digit percentage increase next month, lads. Another brand called Cushelle said earlier this year it was going to have to start raising prices on its products. What's causing it? The old supply chain around the world. Wood, we heard, is one of the things. And you know where paper comes from. It comes from wood originally. So, will we be able to, the price of pulp has gone up. Will we be able to afford toilet paper with prices beginning to rise significantly? The price per tonne for pulp has jumped from $600 in September to more than $900 last month. That's a 50% increase in a very, very short space of time. Now, that's toilet paper. Now you can understand how inflation hits a project like St. Conan's Park. 40% at this stage, from 9 million up to about 15 or 16. And with the way toilet paper is going, lads, a lot more could go down the toilet, Kira.
I actually noticed the increase in toilet paper the other day. So I saw that article yesterday and I was laughing to myself because I did notice. I was like, oh, this toilet paper, a lot of them have increased in prices, even the multi-packs.
I'm going to refrain from jokes around the whole matter of toilet paper and whatever else. But
it's a very serious subject. There's no jokes around that. It's an essential item, isn't it, toilet paper? Anyway, we are going to move on now to a very important and serious topic. The chief executive of Lifeline Ambulance Service joins me. That is David Hall. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Kira.
Over 64,000 ambulances, David, spent over an hour at an Irish hospital last year. That's before they offloaded a patient and getting back on the road to obviously treat any more that need their help. Very, very shocking figures.
Yeah, I think this is an ongoing challenge that the hospitals and the emergency departments and indeed the ambulance service has for the last number of years, if not over the last decade. Nothing really new in it. I think the difference this time around that has taken people off guard slightly is that the excuse last year was COVID and the various decontamination and cleaning that was required of ambulances. But when you look at the statistics and the numbers that were released this year, It shows that the numbers are very similar to last year during COVID. So this is a major crisis, a major problem at the emergency department. It's the not adequate staffing. It's unsafe. It's unsafe for patients. It's unsafe for staff. And indeed, you know, the existing resources have not been added to. So you've got a situation where if you or I are waiting on an ambulance, that ambulance may very well be just waiting outside the emergency department with a patient possibly still in the back of the ambulance in an unsafe environment for a long period of time, and we don't have an ambulance available to respond to us if we needed one.
You've called it inhumane, the ambulance is being tied up and putting patients, people's lives at risk. You mentioned not much has changed in terms of the story. Obviously, we're getting more figures and more information in that way. It seems as if, as a society, we've become numb to these figures.
Yeah, I think we've become numb to problems. We've become numb to dangers. We've become numb to inhumane stories. And we get excited for 24 hours. And then after 24 hours, we just accept it and say, that's Ireland. And unfortunately, we've been accustomed to it. We've been sort of, you know, commissioned to take that view and take that stance. It does become a different story, Ciara, in circumstances if you or your family need an ambulance, where there aren't adequate ambulances, or indeed the ambulances haven't been released from the emergency department and they can't respond to you in an adequate time. Because ultimately, we're talking about emergency calls, we're talking about life and death situations. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about the odd broken leg or somebody not feeling too well, but we're talking about certain situations where people's lives are at risk, where the time for treatment from qualified paramedics and the transport to hospital is critical. And that is the window we're looking at, and that is the window that's closed when ambulances are delayed outside emergency departments, as they have been for 10 years. Little else changes, and the extra resources are simply not there. At the moment, the first time in 20 years, the National Ambulance Service has used private ambulance services to move routine transfers, not emergency calls. For some reason, they believe they're the only ones good enough to move emergency patients, despite us all having the same license and the same standing as with the regulator. The National Ambulance Service has made a determination that only they can move emergency patients, and in circumstances where they don't have an ambulance, you will wait, and you will wait at whatever consequence to yourself. So there's a combination of circumstances that have arisen that really endanger people, and it's unsafe. It's a crazy situation where prisons are full, hospitals are full, you know, emergency departments are full, the airport's full, and all of these things have a consequence, but this is one that deals with life and death as opposed to just comfort.
The target time for an ambulance is less than 30 minutes, but on 64,182 occasions in 2021, the turnaround time was over an hour, close to nearly 23% of all the ambulances that went to hospitals throughout the country last year, that is. In 165 cases, the turnaround time was over 5 hours. Over 20,000 fewer ambulances had turnaround times of an hour in 2019 and 2020. So 2019, obviously, prior to the pandemic. The HSE says during the pandemic, the National Ambulance Service experienced longer offload delays, as you pointed out, David, at the emergency departments due to infection prevention and control measures. This is an issue that continues. As David said, it's literally life and death, inhumane, he has called it. And David Hall is the chief executive of Lifeline Ambulance Service. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Thanks, David. Staggering hours, I have to say, indeed. Thank you, Ciara, for that as well. Now, keeping messages coming just before we go to the Ballyshannon Action Group and Owen. Maynooth supports Ukraine. They're looking for items, Aldi, Dunn Stores, Tesco, Super Value, Lidl vouchers, washing powder, EU adapters, toiletry, sanitary nappies, kitchen cleaning products, bottled water, snacks, drinks, dog and cat food, vouchers for Maynooth, new or nearly new toys, no clothes, please. That's for the Ukraine appeal that's going on in Maynooth at the moment. Collections point at the post office rooms, at university apartments, reception rooms, from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Monday to Friday this week. Or you can contact Barbara. I'll just give out one number on 087 921 6672. Barbara, 087 921 6672. The collection point is the post office room at the University Apartments reception from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Monday to Friday this week. They're collecting for those things in for Ukraine and that, Owen.
A community group in Ballyshannon has requested that increased restrictions and monitoring be placed on the extractive industry in Kildare's upcoming County Development Plan 2023 to 2029. In its recent submission on the draft County Kildare Development Plan, Ballyshannon Action Group highlighted a number of protections in the current draft and previous plans. And indeed, spokesperson for Ballyshannon Action Group is Joanna Costello. Joanna, good morning and welcome to the programme.
Hello, how are you?
I'm not too bad. So, look, tell us first of all, these protections that you highlighted in the submission to the development plan, what are they and what's your, I suppose, issue with them?
There are a number of kind of problems that we have with the language that was used in the draft text, and that's what kind of namely our submission is around. Firstly, there's a kind of a glowing introduction to the extractive industry in one of the chapters, and you know, kind of attributes the quarrying and the extractive industry of having some kind of benefit in terms of climate action. We kind of think that there needs to be proof of that. So if they want to insert that type of text into what we see as our county development plan, we need to see where the extractive companies are helping out in that regard. What is the benefit in terms of climate action? Because we don't want that inserted into our county development plan where it's just kind of a throwaway comment or something that was potentially suggested by maybe one of the other submissions, maybe from one of the extractive companies themselves. So we think that there needs to be a kind of a change there. And there's a number of things like that. There's also references to the adequate supplies of these natural aggregates in the region, and that they would be protected from, say, the development of rural housing at those locations. We would kind of take issue with that there is kind of pinpointing of the natural aggregates in the region and that they would be safeguarded for potential extraction over other kind of sustainable development. We believe that there's an oversaturation of quarrying within Kildare County Council as it is. We think Kildare County Council and we as the public need to be very careful about any further extraction in this region. Our key message really is that we need to have some sort of measurement and monitoring of the amount of extraction that's going on within this county. Not just on one site, we need to know what their level of impact is on, yes, on climate action targets, but also on the immunity of areas around these sites. So we believe, like particularly around Kilcullen, there is an awful lot of quarrying there already. There's due to be more quarrying down the line. And already you can see the impact on those areas in secondary roads, on the main street going up to Kilcullen. The amount of the HGV traffic that goes up through Kilcullen Main Street is just really, it's huge. And it can be overwhelming for small areas like this. Our issue is that Kildare County Council needs to get in here. We need to have some sort of measurement over what's appropriate. What is, like they talk about the amount of aggregates that we need in the region. So what is that region? Is it, are we getting adequate supplies for the region as in Leinster? Or are we allowing for the land in this area to be carved up and used at the expense of the people in Kildare to furnish external markets, particularly international markets? There are a number of companies here that are extracting the natural resources in Kildare and they're exporting abroad. And they have no quarries abroad, but they have a massive international market. What is adequate supplies? And we need that to be measured, and that needs to come into any sort of planning decisions down the line.
What's the alternative then, Joanna? Because, I mean, Kildare County Council, and I'm sure the companies as well would argue that this work needs to be done, that they have, you know, followed all the steps that are required. But also, the example that you gave there, Kilcullen, if quarrying is not carried out in Kilcullen, does it not push the issue or push the quarries to another place? So where would the alternative, I suppose, locations for the quarries be?
Yeah, well, like our argument there is that, you know, you can't have an oversaturation of quarries in the one area, otherwise the place will be obliterated off the map basically in a couple of decades. And we have an issue as well with the fact that a lot of these sites are being extended beyond their initial planning permission. So we have Brownstown site just outside Kilcullen, which is now into its third decade. There is Halverstown, there's Ballysacks Hills, which they're trying to have extended at the moment, and then there's the potential of Raithfield here in Ballyshannon. Yes, that is an argument that it could be placed elsewhere, but we have in the programme for government, and we have in the Climate Act, and we have in the National Planning Framework, Project Ireland 2040, that there are goals, our climate action goals are to decrease the amount of carbon-heavy business and lower the emissions of all these industries, and it should be phased out, really. And we know that that's kind of not an immediate goal, that there will be quarrying needed, but that quarrying needs to be measured. How on earth are we going to measure it if there's no monitoring done by Kildare County Council? Like, what is adequate supplies if nobody's actually counting? You know, like, it just beggars belief that that's not actually quantified at the moment.
Just finally then, Joanna, as we said at the outset, this is a submission from the Ballyshannon Action Group to the County Development Plan. I understand you've also contacted all Kildare County councillors, senators and TDs to request their support of the submission and its recommendations throughout the next stages of consultation. Have you got any responses from the various different public representatives around the area?
We have, yeah. We had a meeting a couple of weeks ago before we actually submitted our submission, and we had a number of councillors, Ivan Keatley, Mark Lee, Aoife Breslin and Suzanne Doyle, and they came over and had a conversation with us that night. We had a number of the TDs and senators in the area as well who since read the submission and say that they're happy to support. So we're happy that, you know, our voices are being heard, and hopefully that will continue to happen at the next level of the draft plan. Our AGM is happening now on the Thursday, 23rd of June at 7 p.m. So we're welcoming everybody to pop along to that, and we can give everybody a full update of where we go from here, really.
Okay, Joanna Costello, spokesperson with the Ballyshannon Action Group on that issue. Joanna, many thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Owen.
Okay, then, looking at some of the messages that have been coming in for quite a while, a listener says, this was in response earlier this morning. I mean, on a separate GA issue, the idea that Kildare and Mayo are playing in Croke Park on Saturday evening at 6 o'clock is farcical. I'm not going to sit on the fence on this. The bloody place is going to be half empty. The idea of bringing Clare and Roscommon up as a doubleheader from the west of Ireland, when Pearse Stadium in Galway would be available as a halfway house, is beyond belief that this has been done. Clare and Roscommon, only the diehards of the diehards will travel. Croke Park will be barely, it won't even be half full, probably a quarter full on Saturday evening, with zero atmosphere in relation to that. Then last night in the Connacht Minor Football Final, Mayo beat Galway. This was, you know, this fixture was known up front. So Mayo and Kildare Minors will play in Tullamore on Sunday, and their supporters will be expected to go and support their county. And the same two counties play in Croke Park on Saturday night. Come on! Now, the reason this has been done, as I understand it, the reason that there's a doubleheader in Croke Park on Saturday evening in a quarter full stadium at best is Sky. Because Sky have the television rights to the two games, and my understanding is their preference would be, and this is my understanding, if Sky wants to point out that it's not, doesn't reflect the factual situation, I'm happy to hear from them. If Croke Park wants to say it doesn't reflect the factual situation, I'm happy to hear from them. The matches will be televised, so I'll ask the question then rather than make a statement. Is the reason that Clare versus Roscommon and Kildare versus Mayo will be in Croke Park at 3:45 and 6 o'clock on Saturday evening, was that decision made on the basis of Sky television coverage or not?
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie. Kildare
KFM. So, Kildare versus Mayo on Croke Park Saturday evening, and the supporters would be expected to go and fork out and then head off to Tullamore on Sunday for an All-Ireland Minor quarter-final. Come on, lads. Breda says the GAA has been sold out to Sky. They're now calling the shots, says Breda in regards to that, and making the point that we were making as regards to two different venues for the same counties playing. Could the decision not have been held off? Could the Minors not be put in as part of a treble header in Croke Park? There have often been treble headers. So put the Minors on, maybe at 1 p.m, followed by Clare Roscommon, followed by, it would help, something like that, I don't know. But anyway, I don't think many people are going to travel to either venue, given current costs and everything else, with costs going through the roof. And we talked about toilet paper a couple of minutes ago. If you want to know how expensive toilet paper has become, a listener says, Clem, 9 rolls of toilet paper, says Anna, were £2.75 a week ago. They're now £5.50. Doubled the price. Toilet paper. Lads, it's time to stop using 2 sheets or 3 sheets. It's time to go back to 1 sheet. Maybe it's time to go back to the newspaper, is it? Oh, God, do you remember the toilet paper they used to have in school, lads? The shiny stuff. Oh, my good God. It would slide off you. Like you were coming down the side of a mountain. The shiny stuff. The newspaper. Oh, Lord almighty, if you were ever caught short. And the old creases in it. Oh. Are we going to 1 sheet? Is there something? Is there an ad on television? Isn't there an ad on television on where he says, is it Tommy 1 sheet and Tommy 2 sheets?
I think so, yeah, but that's to do with kitchen paper now. Yeah, you have to be careful there.
Well, I think there'll be Tommy 1 sheet from now on in regards to that. Tim Durkin, good morning to you.
Good morning, Cam. How are you?
I'm very good, thanks. Right, we're on the price of toilet paper doubling in a week. So it's not surprising that St. Conor's Park development, redevelopment, has gone from a price of 9 million to 17 million. Others says they'd like to know what has been spent on it so far. The only thing I can answer you there is what would be spent on it so far would be to do with consultancy costs, drawing up of plans, architects, experts, everything else like that. And a lot of that would be subject to contracts, which would be confidential and GDPR, and not for me to reveal it on air this morning. Now, Tim, let's go to some of your, because we want to get in, if we can, a bit of advice for the leaving certs before they begin work tomorrow morning. You wanted an update on the M4 motorway upgrade.
Yeah, this is something that I've been pushing for quite some time, and it's been on the cards probably since 2017. So the section from Kilcock to Maynooth was completely resurfaced with noise-reducing tarmac. So when you're travelling, we'll say, from Maynooth to Kilcock now, you hit the line in the tarmac, and it's almost silent when you hit it. But unfortunately, the surface from Maynooth to Leixlip is now about 23 years old and is quite loud. Got a huge amount of complaints in terms of noise from people living quite close to the motorway. But there's also capacity issues on the M4 in terms of the junction at Maynooth is at about 140 to 150% capacity at the moment. That needs to be looked at. And also the addition or possible addition of a third lane on the motorway, which will yet to be decided, but could possibly be a bus lane or just a standard traffic lane.
Well, if I might read some of the reports you've got back, because this is certainly not going to happen today or tomorrow. Stage one consists of the development and appraisal of a long list of options to reduce to a short list of options. I love that. Stage two, appraisal of the short list of options to identify the emerging preferred options. This is like something you get in a comedy programme. The stage one assessment is substantially complete. That's the good news. And is currently being finalised. Now, a public consultation has been prepared about the whole project. So the event has been described as an important opportunity to obtain valuable feedback. And the public consultation is being planned for this summer. Can you put a firmer date on that, Tim?
Yeah, one of the things I said at the meeting was I prefer it didn't happen during the summer months because the possibility of people being away on holidays and reducing the public consultation is quite high. So I specifically said at the meeting I'd like to see it done in September when people are kind of back in full swing. So that's
that's
okay.
A wish, I suppose, at the moment is not a definite, but as it stands at the moment, that there's no definite date, it's just to be conducted this summer.
All right. Briefly on this one, Tim, if you would, an update on the Maynooth local area plan. When will it commence, do you think?
Yeah, there's an issues paper probably going to commence close to the end of this year, so it's similar to the county development plan. Issues paper consists of a public consultation, which is set out in not in statute, but it has a run similar to the council development plan in terms of getting the public's view on what the issues are and what's needed for Maynooth.
Right.
Maynooth is going to grow substantially probably in the coming years, so we really do need to get this right.
You had a question in regards to unauthorised developments as to whether the council would publish the details on their website, on the council website. The council says it is not the council's intention to publish details of unauthorised development files on the council's website. Is that to do with GDPR?
That's what they're saying. Slightly disappointing because they used to publish details. Now, not every piece of detail associated with a file, but they would at least put up that whatever the case was in relation to it, whatever it was in relation to, be it what type of unauthorised development it was, where it was, and who the owner was, and what stage it was at. That information used to be freely available on the council's website. GDPR is responsible for a lot of issues at the moment, which are being worked through on a national level. But it also relates back to CCTV footage that, in most circumstances, can't be used as evidence.
That's right. There is a very complex situation there, Tim, in terms of GDPR and whatever else. And if you would, in a line, because I need to just get to a leaving cert item I want to do, you asked the council to provide an update on plans to resolve the lack of sewage capacity in Maynooth and Kilcock, but the council said that's a matter for Irish Water, not for them.
It is, and at the next meeting I'll be inviting Irish Water to attend, which they have done in the past. As it stands at the moment, to my knowledge, there's capacity for an additional 20 houses in Maynooth.
All right, on that basis.
Which is worrying.
All right, it is indeed. One thing is for sure, there's going to be even more demands on the service. Fine Gael Councillor Tim Durkin, thanks for joining us, Tim, on that.